You were watching us all the time with the sophons?
That's right.
Through the sophons, I was by your side throughout all the years of your suffering. I experienced your trials and tribulations as though I was there myself, Tianming said. I know everything. I've always been with you.
This line had deeply moved Cheng Xin when he said it to her. But AA's reaction was completely different. She gazed at Tianming with narrowed eyes.
Did you watch us while we were in the shower? While we were changing?
Tianming's mouth hung open. He had not expected this development.
Hey, answer me!
No! Really, no!
Tianming protested, hoping AA was joking. AA continued to gaze at him suspiciously, and Tianming flushed.
All right, I confess, I did look in on Cheng Xin a few times while she was... But it was to protect her. I really didn't look at you at all.
Oh, so I was not even attractive enough for you to sneak a peek?
Somehow, AA had grown even more angry.
Okay, let me amend that.
Tianming had no idea how to get out of this minefield.
In Australia, one time, when you two were both in the shower. You remember how so many people wanted to harm Cheng Xin back then.
So you did look! You bastard!
AA raised a fist, ready to punch him.
Tianming decided that there was no way out of this trap, except to pull AA into another kiss. At last, his answer was satisfactory. Sometime later, Tianming asked gingerly,
So, you're not mad anymore?
AA giggled.
Oh, it's just too easy. Did you think I was really mad? Only you common-era men think this is a big deal.
Tianming held her and gently kissed her forehead. Tenderness filled his heart. He knew well that AA was trying to keep it light, but the reality was that they were reliving the most harrowing period in human history. Her jokes were intended to relieve the oppressive psychological weight of history, but it was a burden he couldn't set down.
You were saying that you kept watch over us, AA said. But not long after Cheng Xin woke from hibernation, that madman Wade almost killed her. Did you see that?
The grin on Tianming's face disappeared, and sorrow and guilt took its place. AA immediately regretted it.
I'm sorry, Tianming. I know it wasn't your fault. You were light years away and all you could do was to watch helplessly. It must have felt terrible. Don't blame yourself. After all, Cheng Xin ended up all right.
Tianming let out a laugh that was closer to a sob. Under the eerie black domain sky, the sound seemed even more pitiful.
Helpless. Oh, I wish I was helpless. If I really couldn't do a thing, it would have been a great fortune for humanity. But I was responsible for eliminating the last opportunity for Earth to escape total destruction. Tell me, why shouldn't I blame myself?
What are you talking about?
Tianming's answer shocked AA to the core.
On that day, I saved Cheng Xin.
The other half of the truth behind that failed murder 400 years ago would be revealed only now.
Once Cheng Xin awakened from hibernation, I kept on watching over her. I missed her so much that her every gesture and expression seemed entrancing. After being apart for several hundred years, I never imagined I'd see her again in this manner. Though light years separated us, I felt I was right next to her. For a few days, I did nothing but watch her until she got that phone call from Wade, in which he disguised his voice as yours.
The phone call?
AA struggled to remember. Since the caller invited her to meet at an out-of-the-way spot, I grew suspicious and used the sophons to trace the call. Soon I found that the caller wasn't you at all, but Thomas Wade with a voice mask. I didn't know who he was, of course,
but the Sofan soon discovered his real identity and other activities. I immediately recognized his motive. He wanted to be the sword holder. When I found out the truth, I was stupefied. I had been so absorbed with Changxin that I failed to notice that she was already being discussed as the most favored candidate for the sword holder. What an impossible occurrence. Everything had happened because I gave Changxin that star. Our star. Changxin could have lived out the rest of her life in peace, but because of that star, she had become a saintly woman possessing a whole world in the eyes of the worshipful public. They even saw her as an embodiment of the Virgin Mother. I knew very well that Changxin was exactly the kind of sword holder the Trisolarans were waiting for. As soon as she won the election, the Trisolarans would attack without hesitation. They believed that she was incapable of pressing the button to initiate the broadcast. And because the Trisolarans believed this, it was irrelevant whether Changxin would push the button at the decisive moment. Whatever she chose, it would be too late. Humanity was doomed. Because of a star, I pushed my beloved onto the path that would lead to her destruction, as well as the destruction of the human race. I followed Wade and saw him conceal an antique pistol under his jacket before he left for the meeting place. I didn't know everything about him, and so I harbored the hope that he was going to use the gun merely as a way to threaten Changxin. He would not use it if she agreed to exit the race. I actually hoped that he would succeed in convincing her to withdraw, which would be better for her, better for humanity, better in every way. But then I saw Wade point the gun at her before even speaking, and I knew I was wrong. Thomas Wade was not someone who merely threatened. Laws and morals were no restraints for a man like that, who would pay any price to achieve his goal. Even if she agreed to withdraw, Changxin might tell others what he had done. But a corpse told no tales. And the goal he had in mind, to become the sword holder and eliminate the Trisolaran threat, was also one that I wanted to come true. Ironic, isn't it? Tian Ming's smile was bitter.
But what could you do? AA asked. The Sofans could do nothing at that moment.
That's not quite right. Though subatomic in size, the Sofans could affect the world in tangible, visible ways. For example, by repeatedly striking the retinas at a high speed, the Sofans could cause people to see images. This was a technique used back in the last years of the Common Era. I didn't have the authorization to direct the Sofans to do such a thing, or I would have reported Wade's plans to the police, even if that meant exposing my identity. However, I could report what I saw to the Trisolarans. This involved no delay at all, because they had installed a chip in my brain. If I directed my thought at them, the Trisolarans would understand the situation right away and guide the Sofans to protect Changxin.
But even if you hadn't told them, didn't the Trisolarans keep all the swordholder candidates under surveillance?
AA asked. They should have. But you have to remember that the Trisolarans still lacked in-depth understanding of human society. Even if they had kept Changxin under surveillance, a simple trick like Wade's fake phone call would have taken them a long time to figure out and would have required the use of cloud computing. They wouldn't have responded quickly enough. Also, they had to be cautious. If they were found to be interfering in the elections using the Sofans, that would have made humans far more vigilant against Trisolaran influence. At least, based on what I knew at the time, only Sofans under my control were at the site of Wade and Changxin's meeting. I don't know if the Trisolarans would have done something if I had not alerted them. But the fact was, in the end, I acted. So many thoughts went through my mind at that moment. Other than my love for Changxin, I had numerous other reasons to save her. Changxin had a gentle heart, but her will was iron. Who could say for sure that she wouldn't be a capable sword holder? Maybe she would keep the Trisolarans in line even more effectively than Wade. And even if Chungxin was a bad choice, if humanity was set on electing her, with her out of contention, maybe they would elect someone else just like her. Wade and his supporters still had no chance. Fundamentally, Chungxin's death wouldn't have altered humanity's fate.
I agree, Tianming. You made the right choice. You were dealing with history, with the collective decision of all of humanity that set them on their path to doom. Chungxin's own death wouldn't have changed things.
AA comforted. I didn't know if I was right, but I knew that I wasn't thinking rationally. I was just trying to look for excuses to save her. It was self-deception. After I realized that, I made the decision, or maybe it's more accurate to say that I thought I made the decision, to sacrifice my beloved and protect humanity. I was already a criminal, and I wanted to carry out my last duty to the human race. And so, I watched as Wade shot Chungxin. But he didn't aim for her head. His shot shattered her left shoulder instead. I knew that it wasn't out of mercy. The madman enjoyed the suffering of others. But Wade didn't realize that he had made a fatal mistake. I had thought after enduring so much torture and pain, I would be able to bear any loss. I thought I could watch my beloved die in front of my eyes and still hold fast to my faith. But when I saw blood pouring from Chungxin's shattered shoulder, a heart-rending love seized me. Rationality and sense of duty disappeared. I knew only that I could not let her die, no matter what. Even if all of humanity would die because of my decision, I didn't care. As long as she lived, I was willing to commit the greatest sin in the world. Without hesitation, I directed my brain implant to issue a warning to the Trisolarans and send them the feed from the Sofons. You must stop Wade and save Chungxin. Without her, your plot will not work. And then Wade made his second shot. Wade had aimed his gun at Chungxin's head, but somehow, his hand drooped a fraction of an inch at the last second, and the bullet pierced Chungxin's belly instead. My Sofon informed me that a different Sofon had arrived on the scene at light speed and was active around Wade's eyes at the moment of the second shot. Clearly, that Sofon had been interfering with Wade's sight, causing his aim to be off. Due to the lack of time, the Sofon had not been able to make Wade miss Chungxin completely. A puzzle that had long bothered AA was finally resolved. By the time Wade attempted to assassinate Chungxin, he had already lived long enough during the Deterrence Era to know that advances in medical technology meant that a headshot was the only way to ensure her death. His first shot could be explained as a manifestation of his cruelty and perhaps as an attempt to disable Chungxin's ability to fight back. But his second shot should not have missed. Given his high intelligence and professional skills, it was an inexcusable error. She had later discussed this puzzle with Chungxin, and they could find no reasonable answer except the rather strained explanation that perhaps Wade, as a man of the common era, was entranced by Chungxin's beauty and could not bear to ruin it by shooting at her face. They never could have guessed that the truth involved Yun Tianming directing the Sofons to interfere from light years away. The Sofon's interference with his sight was very subtle, and based on records of Wade's interrogation, he did notice that his vision had seemed to waver for a split second, which he attributed to his age and nerves. He wasn't very focused on the second shot anyway. Rather, he was upset that his third shot had been a dud. He was certain that if the third shot had fired, Chungxin would have died. In the end, he called it all just a series of unfortunate coincidences. The dud was indeed a coincidence, that also disguised Sofon involvement. But in truth, even if he had been able to fire the third shot, the bullet would have simply swept by Cheng Xin's ear. By then, the Sofon had already created a perfect illusion in his eyes. There was a kind of perfect symmetry to Wade's failure. He had been responsible for picking Yun Tianming's brain to be sent into the abyss of space. And that very brain, ultimately, frustrated his plan and pushed humanity toward the abyss of annihilation through the unpredictable currents and eddies of history.
And so, I saved Cheng Xin, but also ruined the last hope for humanity. What happened after that, you already know.
Tianming dropped his face into his hands and sobbed.
Oh, I'm so sorry, my darling. It's not your fault. You did everything you could.
AA's words of comfort came from the heart. After hearing his incredible tale, she really didn't blame him. Instead, she loved him even more.
When did I fall in love with such a man? Strong and fragile at once.
IAA didn't know the answer to her own question. She only knew that the fate she had struggled against for so long had finally arrived. She was going to put aside all doubt and love him with her whole heart. She had to awaken his love with her own, to rebuild his strength with her own.
Should I tell him my secret?
AA started to speak, stopped, started again, and stopped again. Through the years, she had lost count of the number of lovers she had taken, but she had never been so nervous as now. She knew that her secret was extraordinary and would change the way he understood the intertwined history between the three of them, as well as the inflection point of humanity's fate. She needed Tianming to understand and forgive her secret, or else the two of them would never share true intimacy, no matter how long they lived together. She remembered what she had told Cheng Xin back when they first met during the Deterrence Era.
You're thinking of him again, aren't you? This is a new age, a new life. Forget about the past.
She had been wrong. Utterly wrong. Fate liked to play games. And the past, as Faulkner said, was never dead. It wasn't even the past. It always returned and forced you to confront it. That was true of Cheng Xin, of Yun Tianming, and certainly of her. But perhaps now was not yet the time. Tianming was still lost in the pain of the past. He spoke to AA next of the 10 momentous minutes after the sword holder handover ceremony, when the droplets launched their attack against Earth. Although by then the destruction of Earth was already a fait accompli, he kept on hoping that Cheng Xin would press the button and force the Trisolaran bugs to experience the same despair of losing everything in their desperate gamble. At least then, he would experience the pleasure of vengeance for the suffering he had endured for the last few decades. He wanted to watch the Trisolarans face the reality of their own end and to see their pain and regret. He watched Cheng Xin, knowing that all the Trisolarans on the home planet and in the fleet were also watching. 1 minute passed. Another. Cheng Xin trembled, her hand hesitating over the button. His heart and the whole Trisolaran world trembled with her. But the outcomes they wished to see were polar opposites.
Press it. Damn it. Why don't you press it? Press the button and give voice to justice. Press the button and punish evil. Let them die with us.
His voiceless scream echoed in his mind. But in the end, Cheng Xin did not push the button. Instead, she tossed the trigger away. She stopped shaking, and a preternatural calm came over her.
She had made her decision. The air around Tianming filled with text messages from his Trisolaran colleagues.
Did you see that? Tianming, we won! We won! She couldn't do it! The Earth is ours!
For a species that despised emotions as much as the Trisolarans, this was an unprecedented display of joy. Tianming hated Chengxin then for the first time.
Why are you so weak? Why won't you at least give us the satisfaction of mutual destruction? Why are you protecting these faithless bugs? Send them to the grave with us! Are you a human being or an alien?
Somehow, he again recalled that college outing to Miyun Reservoir. On that trip, Chengxin had picked up a caterpillar wriggling along the trail and gently deposited it on the grass so it wouldn't be stepped on. Several of the other girls shrieked in disgust, but Tianming had been deeply touched. Because of Chengxin, he memorized the identifying characteristics of the caterpillar and later looked it up in a thick reference book in the library. The caterpillar was the larva of a plain gray moth, without the colorful wings of butterflies. The moth belonged to an ancient branch of the Lepidoptera order, tracing its fossil lineage all the way back to the Jurassic period and even earlier. When the first ancestors of that caterpillar saved by Chengxin had wriggled over the soil of Pangaea and spread their fresh wings in dinosaur-filled jungles, there had been no civilization on Trisolaris, and humans would not arrive for eons. The moth had certainly a more ancient claim to the right of existence on Earth. But during the last few decades of the Common Era, human activity had destroyed its habitat, and the species was on the verge of extinction. No live specimen had been seen for many years by the time of their college outing. Chengxin had saved a precious life. After that, whenever Tianming thought of how Chengxin might have saved an entire species, a certain sweetness filled his heart, as though he'd had something to do with it. He imagined the caterpillar turning into a moth, finding a mate in the mountains near Beijing, multiplying for generations, thereby continuing an ancient lineage. And Chengxin was their protector, their goddess. He could never have imagined that such an insignificant event was a preview of the fate of two worlds. No matter how much he thought about her, Tianming did not understand Chengxin completely. All he knew was that the woman he loved had not changed over the course of two centuries. She wasn't at fault. Those who made her the swordholder, including himself, were at fault. In a moment, his hatred had turned into self-loathing and guilt. Messages from other Trisolarans continued to swarm the air around him. This species, so lacking in emotional intelligence, now thought of Tianming as one of theirs. They shared their joy with him without reservation and mocked and ridiculed Chengxin.
"To be honest," they told him, "we really had no faith in the princeps's plan back when it was first announced. For decades, Luo Ji had been our nightmare. We knew of no way to defeat him. But his successor, oh, how weak, how silly. Tianming, thank you, thank you. You helped us deceive the humans. The pleasure we experienced when that foolish female bug tossed away the trigger for the universal broadcast was greater even than joining during mating. But what was that female bug thinking? Since you were once also a bug from Earth, can you explain her thoughts to us?"
The entire Trisolaran world hung on his answer. Tianming suppressed the tumult in his heart and said simply, "She loves you."
"Love?"
The Trisolarans were confused.
"Are you talking about that emotion that encourages altruistic behavior in order to enhance the reproductive fitness of the species. We experience such emotions too. But how could such an emotion be applied to an alien species from across the stars? Such an act has no benefit to the reproduction of her species.
A man once said, "Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you."
What nonsense is that? That sounds like a paradox.
No. This is a lesson from one of the greatest teachers of our species. Many still believe that this is the greatest truth in the universe, far more important than mere survival. The Trisolarans did not respond for some time, as though sensing the spiritual power in those words. After a while, they said,
"If every species in the cosmos believed this, perhaps there would be no dark forest."
"Perhaps," Tian Ming said. He gazed at the darkness of space outside the portholes, and he suddenly wondered whether the dark forest existed in only this dim corner of the universe. Perhaps only this galaxy, or maybe even the few hundred square light years at the end of one spiral arm. In the rest of the grand universe, the light of love had long illuminated every leaf, every blade of grass, every trail in the forest. What would such a sunlit forest look like? He smiled wryly. Such a puzzle was not his to solve. His fate was to follow the Trisolaran fleet back to the solar system, where he would live out the rest of his life on Earth as the greatest traitor to the human race. He would endure hatred and contempt all his days, assuming he wasn't killed soon by an angry mob. He would never see the universe outside the region dominated by the war between Earth and Trisolaris. What was the point of thinking about anything else? At that moment, completely unprepared, he had entered the sunlit forest. And everything, Earth, the Trisolarans, the whole universe, changed.
"What is the sunlit forest?"
AA asked.
"Does this have anything to do with the mini-universe?"
"I don't know." Tian Ming shook his head. He really didn't. But in that moment, his surroundings had glowed as though suffused by a sudden beam of sunlight. No, the light of a thousand suns. He saw that he and the ship he was on had been transported from the abyss of deep space to some indescribable there. An infinite space. No, an infinity of worlds opened for him. If forced to put what he saw into words, he would have said that it was like what an ant must see upon suddenly emerging from a dark tunnel into a bright garden. Every flower petal, every leaf, every dew puddle was a grand world to him. And in that moment, he saw everything.
"You entered four-dimensional space."
Tian Ming's description reminded AA of the adventures of Blue Space. "No, it's not a higher dimension. I was still in the three-dimensional world, and I've never been to four-dimensional space. But I think that sense of indescribable magnificence I experienced surpassed even four-dimensional space. It's like what Plato said. Emerging from the dark cave, I saw reality. I saw the infinitely beautiful ocean itself." AA had never read Plato, but she soon found a suitable comparison.
"Is it like the first time you saw me?"
Tian Ming laughed and kissed her. After his eyes adjusted to the sudden light that transformed the world around him, the first concrete thing Tian Ming saw was a solid figure that glowed with a silvery light, suspended before his eyes.
At first glance, the figure seemed to be a nearly perfect ring-like structure containing an infinite number of circles of an infinite variety of sizes. But closer examination revealed that the circles were not perfect, because each circle itself was made up of hundreds of thousands of tiny circles, and the circles were connected to each other with complex, subtle structures. The circles appeared at first to be made from translucent lines that glowed with a soft light. But looking closer, he saw that each curve was itself a solid figure with an extremely complex, refined internal structure. It seemed to him that each part of the figure also encompassed the whole, and no matter how closely he looked, he found yet more detailed structures. The level of detail exceeded the capacity of his eyes.
"You mean like a fractal?"
AA struggled to map Tianming's description to her own scientific knowledge.
"No, not a fractal. But I guess that's a barely adequate analogy. Imagine a blooming rose, and this rose forms a part of one petal of another, much grander rose. And the larger rose is in turn just part of the petal of yet another bigger rose. Repeat this process to infinity. And then, if you examine the rose you started with, you find that it is formed from smaller roses, each of which is made of yet smaller roses, and so on ad infinitum. Marvelously, each rose in this image is different in shape, size, appearance, as though they belonged to a billion billion different varieties. I can't do better than that." AA shook her head in confusion, unable to imagine what that would look like. Tianming had dared not gaze at the figure any longer. Its soul-wrenching beauty threatened to overwhelm his identity. He shifted his focus and realized that the circular figure was itself part of a much larger circular structure in midair that filled the entire interior of the ship and continued through and beyond the hull. As in the analogy of the rose, the figures at each level were similar to the figures in the previous level, yet completely different. As Tianming looked around, he noticed that the entire Tri-Solaran ship had been transformed by the marvelous circular structures into what seemed to be semi-transparency, but wasn't. The bulkheads and hull were still opaque, and he could see their surfaces clearly. But he could see what lay beyond equally clearly, as though images captured by different eyes were stacked together. And what he saw involved far more than two eyes. He could see through bulkheads and other barriers, and view each nook and cranny of the ship, including places he had never seen. But at the same time, he could also see the bulkheads and barriers themselves. Later, when Tianming found out about high-dimensional space, he wondered if he had indeed been to such a space during that time. But ultimately, he came to the conclusion that that was not the case. The incredible structures he saw around the ship were still clearly three-dimensional, though nothing could block his view. The infinitely rich and complex glowing structures spilled out of the Tri-Solaran ship in all directions without extending too far beyond it. A few meters outside the hull, which he could now look through, the glowing curves dimmed and disappeared against the background of stars. The structure he could see was evidently part of some grander whole rather than an isolated standalone component. It was as though the ship had somehow discharged the energy stored within this mysterious structure and caused the part touching it to glow. As Tianming would find out later, at the moment Chengxin tossed away the trigger in her hand, the Tri-Solaran fleet had noticed, via gravitational wave sensors, some barely detectable object a few million kilometers ahead of the fleet. The object moved along a complicated, chaotic course, as patternless as Brownian motion. The object's strange movements suggested that it was not a natural phenomenon. The Tri-Solaran Fleet Command, ever vigilant,
placed every department on high alert. The Tri-Solaran crew members, however, were consumed with wild celebrations, and before they could deploy any defensive measures, the mysterious object changed course and rushed toward them at near light speed. It enveloped the several hundred ships of the fleet instantly. Every ship of the fleet was now wrapped in similar eerie glowing structures. The object adjusted its own speed and course to match the fleet's at the moment of interception so as to stay at relative rest. However, the structure penetrated only into the ship Yun Tianming was on. More precisely, it affected only Tianming. At first, Tianming thought he was once again caught in some hallucinatory dream manufactured by the Tri-Solarans. But he knew that, given their cognitive habits, they were not capable of producing such an image. The aliens lacked artistic skills and imagination, and when they created dreams to torture or study him, they relied on elements taken from his memories and subconscious, and rarely inserted anything outside of his experience. This magnificent, beautiful, three-dimensional figure was far beyond the aesthetic capabilities of the Tri-Solarans, and exceeded human imagination. It couldn't be a dream. But if it wasn't a dream, how could he see into every hidden corner of the ship? How could light rays blocked by opaque bulkheads enter his eyes? This was simply incompatible with the laws of physics. Tianming's brain churned chaotically as he tried to come up with an answer.
"Because light's nature is infinite."
It was a voice. No, a thought in his mind. Tianming knew that the thought didn't belong to him, or to any Tri-Solaran. The aliens often communicated with him by directly injecting electrical signals into his brain, and he was familiar with that sensation. This thought was different. It seemed not to come from outside, but to emerge from the depth of his own mind. At the same moment this thought came into his head, Tianming experienced a pang of unprecedented pain that took his breath away. It wasn't a physical sensation, so much as a spiritual wound. A flood of other thoughts and emotions seemed to press against his subconscious, threatening to erupt into his consciousness and drown out what was left of his rationality. The birth of the universe, the light of heaven, the infinity of the cosmos, the profundity of space. Unfamiliarity, mystery, terror, sorrow, joy. Tianming was as frightened as Zeus was before Athena burst forth from his head. He held his head in pain, moaning uncontrollably, but he forced himself to focus and used the Chan meditation-like techniques he had developed over years of resisting Tri-Solaran mental torture to isolate himself from the surging torrent of random thoughts. The violent, chaotic thought stream solidified into ice, then melted into a vast, calm ocean.
"Who are you?" he asked, once he had recovered somewhat.
"I'm the spirit."
"Tree shade in summer, shadows in moonlight, reflection in water, the self in the mirror."
Tianming felt another heavy blow against his mind. His consciousness teetered on the edge of an abyss. He struggled and asked,
"What spirit?"
"The spirit of light."
"Light and shadow, brightness and darkness, a clarion call and perpetual silence. The deep and the firmament, and the spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. The light pierced the darkness, but the darkness did not know the light."
Still another torrent of thoughts buffeted the surface of Tianming's consciousness, barely held together by his will. Tianming's head felt as though it were about to split open. He finally understood the source of his pain. The voice did not converse with him in the usual sense. Instead, it was arranging all his knowledge and memories to express concepts that he could not understand. Every moment brought him a nearly infinite amount of information,
like that infinitely complicated glowing figure in which a grand meaning contained within it smaller understandings, and each smaller understanding was made up of even smaller significations. The various conceptual levels were connected to each other through refined, dense webs of logic, and not a single detail was extraneous. But his biological cognitive machinery was so limited that he could grasp only the most superficial layer and turn it into human linguistic symbols. The rest of the semantic structure inundated his mind, where memory and imagination stirred up a typhoon of emotions and ideas. This was an experience the human mind was never meant to endure. Indeed, if he had not developed superhuman levels of self-control and psychological fortitude in his struggles against the Trisolarans, he would have long collapsed into madness.
"Are you a messenger of God?"
Tian Ming asked, panting, his voice full of awe. Though he was not a Christian, he had gone to church a few times with his mother when he was a child. He remembered a minister who had told him, "If you pray, God will hear you. He will send angels to fill your heart." And there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as of fire, and it sat upon each of them.
"Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord."
And now, at the moment when the Trisolarans had betrayed humanity's kindness and love to invade their home, to eradicate them from the face of the earth, it was time for the God of Justice to appear. The bugs would get what they deserved. And the next thought almost drove him to ecstasy.
"From your vantage point, yes, I am the spirit of the Master."
But then, Tian Ming's dream was shattered.
"The Master is dead. I am only the dead spirit."
Tian Ming was now growing somewhat used to this strenuous way of having a conversation. Gingerly, he asked,
"Are you an extraterrestrial?"
Patiently, his interlocutor corrected him.
"No, I'm the spirit."
"What do you mean exactly by spirit?"
The answer this time was an incomprehensible concept that could not be translated into any fragment of language. Again, his mind was slammed by a tsunami of nearly paradoxical ideas.
"An arid ocean, the end of the earth, a war between dragons and giants, the treasure of the gods, songs hidden in stones."
He screamed and fell to the ground.
"Stop! Stop doing this to me! I can't bear it!"
Tian Ming didn't know if he was speaking or merely thinking.
"This is the only way for us to communicate. In our universe, this is the simplest and most efficient means of exchanging information. But intelligence in this universe has devolved far too quickly, and you can receive idiabstractions only with great difficulty."
Tian Ming did not know what an idiabstraction was, and didn't dare to ask. But he seized on the phrase, "our universe," and asked,
"Are you not from this universe, then?"
Another incomprehensible idiabstraction struck him, and Tian Ming's head felt near explosion. Gasping, he wiped the sweat from his brow and said, despairingly,
"I can't tolerate the idiabstractions. Why don't you go talk to them?"
By them, he meant the Trisolarans, of course. Tian Ming had had enough. He had thought he could endure any kind of mental and physical torture, but he felt weaker than a baby against the power of idiabstractions.
"Forget it. The earth is gone. I don't care about universes or masters or anything at all anymore. Let those heartless Trisolarans try making sense of fucking idiabstractions."
"I tried, but they are far weaker than you mentally and cannot even grasp a single idiabstraction."
"Why?"
"They are bugs."
Bugs was how Tianming contemptuously thought of the Trisolarans, and the spirit had borrowed the term, and now endowed it with a very strange idiabstraction. Surprised, Tianming suddenly realized something. He looked around. Under the influence of the strangely glowing structure, he could see into every nook and cranny of the ship. Yet something was missing. He couldn't see any Trisolarans. He couldn't see anything that might be a reasonable match for an intelligent extraterrestrial. Not little green men, not walking lizards, not octopuses with 8 clawed hands. Nothing. Could this ship be without any Trisolarans? How was that possible? Tianming noticed something about the design of the ship that he had not paid attention to before. There were no conduits or corridors similar to those found on a human spaceship. Other than the large compartment he was in, there were very few other cabins or open spaces. Most of the ship consisted of thin tubes and tiny cubbies, some the size of matchboxes, others as large as a drawer in a dresser. Each cubby contained numerous tiny apparatuses or devices glowing with an eerie light, each about the size of a grain of rice. Some of the grains squirmed and writhed on the floor.
They are bugs.
Tianming sucked in a breath. Everything finally made sense. Those silvery devices were the Trisolarans, each not much bigger than an ant. For centuries, the best human minds had dedicated their efforts to the study of the Trisolarans, and an area of intense focus in this research involved the physiology of the aliens. Although scientists on Earth could not gain access to any specimens, they were able to make some educated guesses based on what they knew of Trisolaris, an environment far more inhospitable to life than Earth's. The Trisolarans were capable of rapidly dehydrating and rehydrating. The Trisolarans could be arranged into a living formation computer, and so on. The consensus among human scholars was that Trisolarans were likely diminutive in size, perhaps no more than 50 centimeters in height. Some scholars went as far as suggesting that they were about the size of rats. In some science fictional films depicting the Trisolaran invasion, the aliens were portrayed as large praying mantises with sharp mandibles and claws. But no one had ever seriously suggested that Trisolarans were only a few millimeters in length. It seemed obvious that a creature about the size of an ant could not possibly evolve a complex brain or build an advanced civilization. In this matter, however, the human scholars committed a major error. Trisolaran cognition was very different from individual-based human cognition. Because Trisolarans enjoyed a direct correspondence between thought and expression, their communication was highly efficient. They thus evolved a collective intelligence that was the foundation of the living formation computer innovation. Although each individual Trisolaran could to some degree think independently, they primarily relied on exchanging information with each other to build up a large collective data bank that was their primary source of intelligence. Moreover, after joining during mating, each set of Trisolaran parents split into multiple larvae who each possessed some memories inherited from the parents. This adaptation allowed young Trisolarans to acquire basic living skills in a very short period of time, because their relatively simple brains handled modular memory effectively. But human scholars were not entirely wrong in their speculation. The adaptations that allowed the Trisolarans to survive extremes in planetary climate and build a lasting civilization also limited the size and development of individual Trisolaran brains. As a result, the Trisolarans lacked imagination and creativity, and relied primarily on proven techniques and collective wisdom from the past. Historically, the Trisolarans rarely experienced the kind of technology explosion common in human history. Even if they left their troubled homeworld and found a more hospitable environment, they would continue to be merely social insects, albeit insects with civilization and technology. This was why the Trisolarans were intent on exterminating the humans, even at the risk of triggering a gravitational wave universal broadcast. They well knew that even if the two species broke through the dark forest state between them to coexist peacefully, humans would soon catch up to and then surpass them technologically. In addition, the Trisolarans experienced an atavistic terror of the gigantic humans, each of whom could flatten hundreds of Trisolarans with a single palm. The relatively low intelligence level of individual Trisolarans had been masked from the humans by the unfamiliarity of their alien society. Humans simply could not imagine that a civilization far more advanced than theirs had been constructed by individuals who were much stupider than humans. This was the fundamental reason the Trisolarans had concealed from the humans their appearance, which they viewed as a weakness. Now, however, the spirit had revealed the truth with its mysterious light. The individual Trisolaran mind was too weak and barren to bear the power of idiabstractions, and the Trisolarans, panicked, couldn't engage in the kind of large-scale group communication that would have formed a collective intelligence. Yun Tianming was, in fact, the only life who could converse with the spirit.
"What are these fibers?"
Tianming pointed to the intricate glowing structure all around him. One of his fingers accidentally struck one of the fibers, and a colorful splash of light flickered around the site. Startled, Tianming examined his finger and saw that it was unharmed. The glowing fiber had simply passed through his finger and hand, as though it wasn't made of matter at all.
"This is my projection into the universe."
Tianming struggled to make sense of this.
"You're saying that your body isn't in this universe?"
"You are from another universe."
"I come from Eden. What you see is the projection of Eden."
"Eden? Like from the Bible? Is this a metaphor of some sort?"
"I come from the Eden of this universe. The perfect world at the beginning."
A torrent of ideas followed perfect world. The dazzling stars of galaxies, a placid lake, a classical garden arranged in perfect symmetry, the Venus de Milo, Mona Lisa's smile, Angres, the source. Then came scenes taken from his dreams. A heavenly kingdom found in a flower. A magnificent palace built over a rainbow. The sights piled one on top of the other, but each captured only a trace of perfection. Finally, the spirit gave up trying to convey the sense of a perfect world to him and left his mind with only a simple geometric figure. A crystalline sphere floating against a dark background. The perfect circle.
"Where is this world?" Tianming asked.
Even with such an imperfect glance, he already sensed the indescribable beauty and grace of that world.
"Destroyed."
The visions he had seen earlier returned, but now changed. Dark clouds covered the stars. A storm wrinkled the lake. Venus's arms broke. Mona Lisa cried. Blood and fire appeared. The demons of hell sacked the heavenly kingdom. Darkness corroded the perfect silvery sphere from two sides until it was only a thin sheet, and then a line, and then just a pinprick of light. Then the bright dot expanded rapidly and filled his consciousness, before fading into darkness. But in this new night, millions of galaxies appeared. The Milky Way, the sun, the moon, the earth. Tianming knew he was witnessing the birth of his world. Tianming was too shocked to speak.
The whole universe that he knew was but an insignificant fragment of the perfect world, the remnants of countless cycles of destruction. Like Guang Yifan and Cheng Xin later, Tianming learned the deep secrets of the universe.
"Who destroyed that perfect world?"
Tianming asked.
"The Lurker."
"The Lurker?"
Severe pain seized Tianming's head again. He understood that he was approaching the limits of understanding, but he refused to give up.
"Why did it destroy Eden?"
"I don't know. Only the Lurker knows."
"Why is it called the Lurker? Is it an individual, or a civilization, or something else? Doesn't every civilization conceal itself in the dark forest?"
"At first, in the perfect world, there was no dark forest as you understand it. But rebellious intelligences brought forth the dark forest. The perfect world collapsed, but the traitors escaped. They are concealed in the universe."
The spirit gave Tianming systematic and complete information, but Tianming could only comprehend a minuscule portion of the flood. The rest was beyond the limits of his mind.
"Wait," said AA, who was having trouble breathing. "Are you telling me that some piece of the civilization of a previous universe has survived into our universe?"
Although she didn't know what Guan Yifan had told Cheng Xin on the spaceship, she did remember the words of the ring. "The fish responsible for drying the sea are not here." She was beginning to understand what the ring had meant.
"I don't know. Or maybe I once did, but no longer remember,"
Tianming said, dazed. Tianming asked the spirit,
"Is there a way to end the dark forest and rebuild the perfect world?"
He seized upon this last hope as Earth's salvation.
"Yes."
"How?"
"Destroy the Lurker, and I will be able to restore the perfect world."
"How do we do that?"
The spirit was silent for a moment before answering.
"I need you to become a seeker."
Another tsunami of thoughts and images inundated him. He understood only the first half of what the spirit said before the itty abstraction broke down his last mental defense. He was drowning in a sea of ideas, grasping for anything to keep himself afloat. He struggled, but no one came to save him. The spirit insisted on injecting increasingly more information into his head and didn't seem to care as he sank under the infinite storm of dreams and thoughts. A second before he blacked out, something seemed to illuminate his mind. He thought he understood an important point, but it was too late. His brain activated the final defense of its own sanity, and he lost consciousness.
"And then?"
AA asked. She had also been taken by the dream of restoring the perfect world. If the perfect world could be recovered, perhaps it was also possible to recover the solar system and Earth, and the human world of the past. Tianming shook his head.
"Then nothing. By the time I recovered, the spirit and its projection were gone."
He looked around. Everything had returned to normal. The Tri-Solaran ship was once again sailing through the darkness of space, with no trace of the spirit anywhere to be found. According to the Tri-Solaran surveillance data that Tianming examined later, the glowing structure had vanished not long after he fell unconscious. Gravitational wave sensors detected the structure moving away from the Tri-Solaran fleet at near light speed along a strange course, and it was soon dozens of astronomical units away. Even Tri-Solaran technology could not follow it.
When the Trisolaran scientists analyzed the spirit's movements, they discovered that if they eliminated the effects of the motion of the Milky Way galaxy, the local group, and the Laniakea supercluster, the spirit's course was extremely simple. In other words, relative to the universe, or at least the immediate vicinity of the fleet, the spirit likely was stationary in an absolute frame of reference. The near light-speed motion was the result of the universe moving, not the spirit. It was only after the spirit had discovered the Trisolaran fleet that it had approached on its own to make contact. What kind of unimaginable power could cause such a structure to remain still and resist the power of galaxies in motion? Further research revealed that the spirit itself was without mass. The mass effect detected by the gravitational wave sensors was caused by a force field around it. The force field isolated the structure from the rest of the universe, but the isolated region was almost without volume. The immense glowing structure had been projected from a tiny point. The spirit was telling the truth. It was only a projection, without substance. The Trisolarans understood that the spirit was from a highly advanced civilization. That civilization seemed to bear them no ill will and had attempted to communicate with them, but no Trisolarans had been able to converse with its representative, the spirit. More than 200 individuals had gone insane trying and had to be dehydrated and incinerated. Their cognitive organs collapsed as soon as they received an idiabstraction, and their biology was such that they couldn't even protect themselves by blacking out. Even Tian Ming seemed to lose his mind. It took more than a month for him to fully recover his faculties. But the Trisolarans had not given up on him in the interim. In surveillance recordings of the encounter, they saw Tian Ming muttering and looking thoughtful, which suggested that he had successfully carried on a conversation with the spirit. Patiently, they cared for Tian Ming, hoping to glean some advanced technology from his recollections of his conversation with the superior civilization. After he recovered, Tian Ming recalled the early part of his encounter with the spirit. But despite his best efforts, he couldn't remember what he had learned. Repeated interrogation, hypnosis, and dream analysis all yielded little of use. The Trisolarans scanned his brain in detail and found that a large region previously devoid of neural activity had been filled to the brim with information. But the Trisolarans could make no sense of the data stored there, and the region seemed to be completely isolated from the rest of his brain. Only a dread of inescapable doom was left in Tian Ming's mind. Though he couldn't recall exactly what he was afraid of, the sense of foreboding persisted and often woke him at night. As time passed, bits and pieces of the information hidden in Tian Ming's subconscious surfaced. One day, when the Trisolarans described to Tian Ming the marvels of their new light-speed spaceships, Tian Ming suddenly remembered the following fragment from his conversation with the spirit.
The most primitive means for achieving security is use the speed of light. Turn yourself into a black hole.
Tian Ming had no idea what it meant to turn yourself into a black hole, and no guess as to how that related to light-speed ships. He only knew there was a connection. But after mulling over the matter for some time, or perhaps guided by some mysterious force, he finally understood the secret of black domains. He proposed revealing a new way to escape from the dark forest state of the universe to the Trisolarans. He needed them to verify his theory, in exchange for their promise to cease the invasion of Earth.
"Impossible," the commander of the Trisolaran fleet informed him. "We will not give up our grand invasion of the solar system for some vague promise of a safety notice. In any event, the Earth bugs have not initiated the universal broadcast and will never be able to do so. We don't need such a measure. At least, not now."
"Then you'll never get any information out of me concerning that godlike civilization," said Tian Ming.
"Well, we do want what you have to tell us," said the Trisolaran commander.
but we won't buy it with the hard-won Earth. Perhaps we have something else you want."
He showed Tianming some scenes transmitted by the Sofons on Earth. The worldwide chaos after the droplet attacks. The anarchy that reigned everywhere. The millions of deaths caused by panicked stampedes, massacres, streaming refugees, famines. One scene in particular caught Tianming's attention. In a suburb somewhere on the west coast of the United States, a young woman who resembled Cheng Xin was found in the midst of a group of refugees. Someone shouted, "That's the bitch! That's the bitch who fucked up everything!" And then the mob surrounded her and began to punch and kick, tearing her clothes off. A man by her side screamed and sobbed for the mob to stop.
"Please, she's not a Cheng Xin. We're Koreans."
But it was useless. Like a pack of wild beasts, the mob scratched and tore and bit and chomped until they literally gnawed chunks of flesh from her.
"That woman isn't Cheng Xin," the Tri-Solaran commander informed him. "Right now, she's under the protection of the United Nations. But we think the situation on Earth is going to deteriorate further, and perhaps she'll meet a fate even worse than the woman you just saw."
Tianming clenched his fists in rage. He had no choice.
"All right," he said through gritted teeth. "I will tell you about the safety notice, but only after you direct Sofon to form an Earth security force to maintain order and prevent needless deaths. They must also protect Cheng Xin and her friends."
And so the Tri-Solarans received the secret of the cosmic safety notice: reduction of the speed of light. Since they didn't know that the location of Tri-Solaris would soon be exposed to the universe, they didn't put much effort into constructing a black domain. Later, after the Tri-Solarans found out about the gravitational wave broadcast from gravity, they did try to create a black domain, but because the Dark Forest attack came so quickly, they couldn't get it ready in time. The humans, who had plenty of time, also missed this chance. Tianming dreamed that he had turned into the seeker that the spirit had described. He flew through the universe aimlessly, searching for the hidden lurker. He swept by millions of stars and threw spiral arm after spiral arm, finding nothing. In the end, he arrived at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, where the core was orders of magnitude brighter than any spiral arm, where millions of ancient stars orbited and twirled around one another in a dazzling cosmic dance. And in the heart of the core was an invisible, monstrous black hole, whose existence was revealed by its massive